Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, a commodity and futures broker here at StoneX. I work in the grain, energy, and livestock markets. I work with producers and consumers, spec and hedge. We use futures and options, OTC, and for our hedging and commercial clients, we also offer consulting services. If you have any questions about what I do here, please give me a call. My number is 800-958-9470 or 312-706-7610. My email address is craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're a client and you hear something that you like or something we need to do, please feel free to reach me anytime by text, phone, or email. If you like the podcast, please go on over to iTunes and give us a positive review. And if you want to check out the newsletter, go to turnerstake.com and you can find it there. So let's get into it. It is Friday, February 11th. Macro news first. CPI came out for the United States. It was 7.5% for January. And that's year over year, that number, that CPI number, where we were last year. 7.5% inflation is the highest it's been since 1982. So that is a 40-year, year-over-year high. And I think it's got the, you know, it's got the central banks concerned. They've been talking about tapering. They've been talking about interest rate rises. I think some traders, you know, it was Goldman Sachs said, you know, instead of 5 interest rate increases this year for a quarter, they expect a quarter for every meeting in 2022 going forward. You have some of the trade expecting a 50 basis point hike, so that'd be 0.5% in the March meeting. The Fed president of the St. Louis Reserve said he's concerned and may have to switch to be dramatically hawkish, I believe was his quote that I saw in Reuters this morning. So interest rate hikes are coming. Tapering is coming. It has the potential to put the economy into a recession, which they know, but I think they are seeing the inflation is more of a concern for them than anything else right now, and they can't let this run away from them. And it takes time. Like, once the rates start going up and the tapering goes in, doesn't mean inflation just stops. They'll slow it, but it will take some time, and it could take the rest of the year to get things at least under control. So that's where we are in that. I'm sure if we can get, you know, if we can do something about lockdowns and mandates and things like that, it would probably be a big help to the supply chain too. So some of this is man-made. You know, some of this is policy-driven, and it looks like tides are turning in that way. But, you know, some of it also too is supply and demand. And then there's a part of it too that is definitely inflationary in terms of what the government's been doing with, you know, with money and their policy. So it's kind of probably threefold that's contributing to all this right now, but it needs to be addressed. So while that's going on, you know, crude oil's going to $100. It looks like it hasn't yet, but it's been what, 90, and it's February. You know, I want to say 60 or 70% of the energy demand in this country has to do with transportation. So especially on the petroleum side, you know, what happens in spring, summer, driving season? You know, probably if we can't ramp up production here or, you know, around the world or Middle East with OPEC, there's going to be, you know, some pressures on the markets going higher. Finally, just on the macro sense of things, the U.S. dollar was up a little bit. Two ones. Actually, focusing on the U.S. dollar and the Canadian dollar. It's interesting. The U.S. dollar is going to have these tightening policies, and that's usually bullish on a currency, even though some of the economic data is poor, right? It's interesting too about when I was looking at the Canadian dollar is they're doing the same thing, but because their economy and their monetary, policy or the amount of Canadian dollars flowing around, North America around the world is going to be less than the US dollar. If they both made the same actions, the dollar would go up and the Canadian dollar would go down just from the difference between the two economies and the money that's being taken out of the system. What's also interesting about the Canadian dollar, I know there's a lot of the Committee of Traders, it shows there's a lot of bets on it to go higher because it's a commodity currency. And in theory, as crude oil goes up, the Canadian dollar should go up, which seasonally that does happen. But another thing that adds to the Canadian dollar is the demand for exports on the ag side. And when other nations and foreign national companies come in to buy things like canola or spring wheat or whatever it may be from Canada, they have to exchange their local currency or dollars for Canadian dollars in order to buy these products in the local market. And if they're not doing it, because basically Canada's, especially on the canola side, has really tried to shut down exports all, completely. Canada is importing corn for feed. They don't have enough, wheat, to do that. And that hurts that currency too. So it's an interesting dynamic, something that's been in the press and been talked about lately. Those are my thoughts on it. I get asked about it. And yeah, if you have any questions, let me know. But I do think the US dollar does turn higher. The only thing that stops the US dollar from probably going to 100 at some point this year is if the European Union gets very aggressive on cutting rates and tapering. I think the market's been thinking they're going to be a little bit more dovish, which would allow the dollar to appreciate. But if the European, Union Central Bank, completely reverses, where they were from a couple of months ago, that would put a hamper on the dollar, and probably be a little bit more positive for the Canadian. So we'll see how that shakes out. Let's move on over to the grain and oilseed markets. We're going to do oilseeds first. That's because we had the WASDE on Wednesday and CONAB on Thursday. WASDE was fine. They thought the USDA would be conservative, ramping down South American production, or particularly Brazil. They did. They went from about 140 or so million metric tons to about 134. A lot of the private analysts, including StoneX, was around 126, I want to say. But no one thought they'd be that aggressive, the USDA at least. But it did tighten stocks around the world. For when CONAB came out Thursday, they went ahead and just slashed down to 125 and a half and took off basically 15 million metric tons. 15 million metric tons times, let's see. So that's about, oh, around 550 or so million bushels of soybeans. And since the initial estimates, we started off at 145 million metric tons. We're at 125 now. So 20, we're probably around 700 million to 750 million lost bushels in South America for soybeans. So the world has to price ration soybeans until we can get a North American crop. And that is why soybeans have been trading the way they are. Why, and canola stays high, palm oil stays high, sunflower stays high. So it's an oil seed story. It's going to be a feed story with the meal component. And it's going to be not just domestic or, South America, North America, it'll be global. And also too, vegetable oil is now being used as an energy source, right? So it's going to be very volatile. For soybeans coming through, I'll add this chart into the show notes, but major soybean exporter carryout for stock to use, the major exporters are Argentina, Brazil, and United States. We take a look at the percentage of stock to use percentages for the major exporters. They're the ones who kind of dictate price at the end of the day of what's available and what's not. We're almost as low as 2011 now. That's interesting, right? So that's and if you and that's based on the WASDE. If you add in the CONAB numbers, to the WASD were probably even tighter, which means that if we get weather issues or not enough acres this summer in North America, there's a potential to set all-time high prices in soybeans for new crop and old crop. If we get, again, the big if has to do with we don't get enough acres, which I can make the argument we get more soybean acres. We'll go over that in a second. Or if there's weather issues. So on the acreage side for soybeans, if you talk to farmers in, in the heart of like Illinois and Iowa, a lot of them are doing their 50-50 rotation and that doesn't end. You get outside of that, you do hear more about soybeans, especially if you can plant soybeans on corn. You really don't need as much. You definitely, when it comes to fertilizer and chemicals, you can have a pretty good yield on soybeans if you can't get if you can't get nitrogen for corn or it's just too expensive. And I wouldn't be surprised if we did see more soybean acres compared to corn. I've seen some big numbers out there, people talking about sub 90 corn acres and over 90 soybeans. I guess that's possible. We'll have to see what happens here with what's available and what guys are willing to pay and how high corn gets, right? To get a revenue per acre to, make, increasing your fertilizer and chemical cost by $100, $200 per acre. But it will be interesting. There's a ton of uncertainty, just a ton of uncertainty on acres this year. Because even, I mean, I just got off the phone with a farmer about wheat, and something I've been hearing about is if, for it's no guarantee that wheat acres, especially in Canada and let's say North Dakota, go to wheat. I mean, you could go to oilseeds, depending on price, availability, and cost. So it's a dynamic situation where things can still change. So when it comes to soybeans, I don't love getting short the market on the board. I'd much rather sell cash grain into either courage calls or, buy call spreads, sell put spreads, or start building a floor. Options are very expensive on the put side. So in my, and I don't see the reason why soybeans should come cratering down unless we get a repeat of like African swine fever or something like that in Canada. I mean, in China, and brings out, half their hog herd. But I would think what we'd want to be looking at is buying call spreads, selling put spreads, and then using those to sell into. I like it for spec traders if you want to take a longer term position in soybeans, even though it is it's a hedger's idea for a farmer to sell into. But I do, it's still relevant even at these prices. We're going to get big breaks just like we did last year. We can see some real volatility. And if you use the option markets, the spreads, it helps us be in positions and not have to deal to, it'll be volatile, but it, doing it that way makes it a lot easier to sit through. I'm just going to bring up my soybean balance sheet real quick. Based on the changes yesterday, the USDA did take on Wednesday, did take old crop down to 325 million bushels. They increased the crush, didn't do anything about exports. And I think exports could go up 100, 200 million on old crop, which basically goes, we go from 325 to 125 for the most part, right? And if that's the case, and I think that's a possibility where it, by the end of the year, we could be pipeline minimum. Some people are arguing the exports don't come back to the United States for old crop. It actually comes back for new crop. And if that's the case, it can, we still need an 89 million acres and a 51 and a half yield to use as much as we produce. Without the increase in exports. So we have a situation here where if we're not 90 million acres or more on soybeans, we're going to be tight minimum. We could be tight minimum pipeline for, I don't know, for this year and next year into 22, 23. We could have another 12 to 18 months of tight oil seed. So, or just encourage a ton of planting. So I think, if we have weather issues and these acres, are under 90 million, it's going to be elevated and volatile markets for soybeans going forward. So there are ways to play it. I know people think sometimes they miss out on the higher price or they don't know what to do, you know, when, because the markets move so fast. If you're in that boat, let me know and we'll figure out a plan here for at least the next 6 months, if not the next year. And we can talk that out, but it's gonna, you know, it could be, you know, when you get the best prices and the best opportunity, it can be the most challenging in terms of just the mental capital and knowing what to do. All right. And that's something we can all talk about later. As for corn, the corn balance sheet didn't change a whole lot. I'm thinking South America might lose 10 million metric tons. If they do, we've a couple hundred million bushels come off exports. It's still not the end of the world. We're still, you know, 1.2, 1.3. So it makes sense why soybeans have run past corn here. Now, what's going to be interesting is between the whole fertilizer and input cost with corn, do we, you know, some people are talking 93 to 91 million acres. I've seen some analysts argue for under 90 in corn, just because of fertilizer and price and where soybeans are and all these things. The uncertainty surrounding acres is really, I can't remember the last time we were this uncertain about the swings in acreage. The Ag Forum will be out in a week or two. They'll have the first crack at where they think acres will be. So that'll be very interesting. And then in terms of wheat, I want to take a look at the corn exports here. So major corn exporters, which is Argentina, Brazil, South Africa, U.S., Ukraine, and Russia, USDA is predicting a build in stock to usage level, going from basically lows. The 2020 lows rival 2011-12 lows. Here's the thing. The weather in Argentina and southern Brazil is hot and dry. The soil, they're planting second crop in a lot of that area is dry. And if we get a return of La Nina type weather, which the forecast right now point to for February, the second crop corn could have a real issue. And if it gets intense, then, you know, what you tend to see is in central and northern Brazil, the rain they get up there will help that crop and might be bigger than expected. But if it's a very intense La Nina, it can't make up for the losses you see in Argentina and southern Brazil, which is what we saw for soybeans. So now we're going to be coming into the traders will be really watching the weather here for, you know, second half of February and all through March and even into April to give us an idea of what that second crop corn looks like. If the weather turns and it's a garden state and things are great, then, you know, things ease up on corn and we probably continue to see acreage switches to soybeans or corn from corn. But if we have that weather issue again, corn could be the leader and drag wheat higher, but corn could be the leader here in, let's say, from the second half of February right until the end of March, depending on how the weather is in those areas. And the corn, you know, U.S., South America, and global exporters don't have a lot of corn, you know, for a cushion here. So any kind of losses will lead to more price rationing. So that's something to keep an eye on. If I am a farmer, I'm probably looking at creative ways to have, again, I've been buying call spreads and selling put spreads to sell into. It's kind of courage calls. I've seen a lot of analysts do it. I think it's a smart way. I mean, we could, just like soybeans, if we have weather issues in South America and we get a continuation of La Nina in the United States and we don't get the acres that we need, we could have prices just as high as last year or higher. So it's a possibility. It's not a certainty or a guarantee, but it's definitely a possibility and more so than in an average year. So, and finally, I was going to talk about the wheat market here. The new drought monitors came out, the United States drought monitor, still dry in the Western Corn Belt, especially the Southeast and then up in the North, kind of the Northern Plains, but the Western Northern Plains. So that's an issue for hard red, the Kansas City wheat and any kind of soybeans and corn grown in the Western Corn Belt. I take a look at the Canadian drought monitor, which is going to be a big factor this year for the wheat side and also oilseed side. And, you know, canola got hit so hard that, you know, we are going to need good canola production along with palm and sunflower to go along with the soybeans and the soybean oil. And I know soybeans and soybean oil and meal tend to dominate But all four of those are going to be important. And I take a look at the Canadian drought monitor that just got released also. And, for those of you that don't know, I mean, the bulk of, the farmland there are basically, if you can think of the United States, like an extension of the northern, prairies. And you go from Calgary and Edmonton, which, you just draw, it's like Denver. They sit on the edge of the Rockies there, the Rockies to the west and the prairie land to the east, and through Saskatchewan and then all the way to the east to Manitoba where Winnipeg is. That is canola and spring wheat country. A lot of the canola is produced in Saskatchewan, that middle province between Alberta and Manitoba, and it's dry. I would say central Saskatchewan into the west, and then an eastern part of central and eastern part of Alberta are very dry. Those are big, big, important parts for the wheat and the canola production. So it's not just drought. It's not just the western corn belt. It's actually the western part of the Canadian growing area too. So I would just keep that in mind as we're going forward. We're going to have to keep an eye on that. I don't know if wheat right now is not the right time for wheat to rally big or go down big. We've already made new crop from the south in Argentina and Australia, which are the major exporting nations in the southern hemisphere. That crop's done. And it's still too early to get real crazy about a weather market in the northern hemisphere for winter wheat and certainly spring wheat. So if wheat's going to go up or down, it's most likely based on export demand and competitive prices with wheat around the world. And it would be a follower to corn, if corn really rallies or doesn't in the next couple of weeks. So I think going forward, if I'm a wheat farmer, I'm looking for ways to build a floor, or sell or buy calls. Those premiums should ease up a little bit to sell into. If I am an end user, I'm still buying month to month, quarter to quarter. Eventually, acres and production catches up, so there's no need to go lock in prices so far out. Unless I'm in the soybean oil and vegetable oil business, then I would be a little bit more aggressive going out and protecting prices. But for corn and for meal and for wheat, I think you can, on the consumer side, you can, do it quarter to quarter. And then, it's just from the spec trade and from the farmer standpoint, I think you want to have some long exposure in the markets. And if you're a spec side, it's just because you're playing the weather markets and the tight stocks. And from the farmer side, it's something to sell into. And also too, if you just don't have it, like there's, if you do get it, I know if you have a situation where you have a drought, it's sometimes nice to have far out calls just to have a little bit of revenue protection there too. So those are my ideas. If you want specific trades for your account, just let me know and we can work on that together. And have a great weekend, everyone, and I'll talk to you all soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.